Okay, what else am I running that could cause a failure?
Yeah, with besides Windows.
Yeah, good answer.
Okay.
Okay, how many people vote that I should have used Linux? Okay, I did. That's this laptop.
It's your hardware.
It's my hardware.
Get up, close to the mic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, close to the mic. Hi, this is the Epic Fail 101 panel on how not to do a presentation at DragonCon. You realize I've spent the last 3 months testing all this stuff. So that's why it's working now. So.
Speaking of which, how's the router doing? The router you're using?
Well, it was working. I was working on wireless, but for some reason, which I've never done this on wireless, I always did it over a wired connection. So. For some reason, FireSheep decided to do an epic fail on me on wireless, so I switched to wired, which I've been using for, like I said, 3 months, and it doesn't work for some bizarro.
You're not using, like, Mac filter on the router or anything, are you?
No. Mm-hmm. No, it's a completely open wireless network. Feel free to use it during the demonstration.
It doesn't talk to
Am I losing...
I think you're making it worse.
Apparently. It should be any moment now.
So everyone, welcome to Tech Support 101.
Yes. This is how not to do a demo. So, well, anyway, we can, while this thing's reconfiguring itself, good, we have video. I don't know if y'all, in, how many of you is first time at the con?
Wow.
That's a lot. Well, welcome to the Dragon Con, first timers. And that you're here at 10 o'clock in the morning is nothing short of miraculous. Traffic yesterday is the worst I've ever seen coming here. It was really bad. And apparently there's the perfect storm of really crazy events
going on. Three football games?
Yeah, there's the Tech football game, there's...
Georgia State.
Georgia State, I didn't hear about that one. Georgia State, which is right down the street. There's Falcons are doing something, the Braves are doing something, there's a NASCAR race, and there's some other conference in town. And us.
And the Chick-fil-A Bowl as well.
Mm. Oh, just terrific.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So anyway, while this is doing whatever it's doing, how many of you know what FireSheep is? Wow, actually a good number. How many have actually used FireSheep and played with it? Five or six. Okay, the proud few. The what was your impression the first time? By the way, if you have questions, there's a guy. Where's Andrew? There he is. He's got a wireless mic. We record these sessions, so make sure you give the name of the person sitting next to you when you give your name. Okay. if you guys have ever been to Black Hat and DEF CON, at Black Hat, everybody has a name tag that says, "Hi, my name is Keith. I'm from Georgia Tech. My mother's maiden name is Bob." You know, and it's got just every kind of description, you know, your social security number, everything on there. We want to know. And they're all government types, and everybody is a Fed says FBI on their badge, you know. You go to DEF CON, which is right after Black Hat. They give you a badge that says DEF CON. And you walk up to somebody in the hallway and say, "Hi, I'm Keith. What's your name?" And they go, "Who are you? Why do you want to know? Are you the Fed?" They have an out the Fed contest every year to figure out who the Fed plant is who's collecting intelligence and outing them publicly. It's really so different. You should go sometime. It's like 8,000 unwashed hackers in a hotel for 3 days. It's just a joy. No, it really is. It's a lot of fun. And I warn you now, if you take a machine to their net and plug it into either one of their networks, reboot that sucker when you get home. Or rebuild it. Replace the hard drive. Okay, Blake, you want to introduce yourself?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Blake Sorensen. I am not the technical guy on this panel. I am a lawyer. I'm primarily a patent attorney. I also do trademark and copyright work and other IP issues. I help startups incorporate and deal with licensing and all that fun stuff. But I like to come to these and answer questions and talk about legal issues to people who, you know, unlike most of the common throngs, are actually interested in these questions. Being a lawyer, everything I say comes with a disclaimer. I am a lawyer. I am not your lawyer. Do not tell me what you did, because it is not privileged, it is not confidential, and I am obligated to report it. So if you have any questions, please, for the love of God, make them hypotheticals. Thank you. Nothing I say today constitutes legal advice. Nothing I say today creates any kind of attorney-client relationship. That said, everything you're about to see, don't do it. There's nothing remotely legal about this.
Yes. Whatever you. By the way, I'm Keith Watson. I'm the Information Security Manager for the College of Computing at Georgia Tech. Basically, I ride herd on about 18,000 wannabe hackers. We had them. I noticed some guys with ponytails doing a wireless LAN survey who didn't work for us. And I asked them, "What are you doing?" They says, "Oh, we're putting in this really cool high-tech wireless thermostat system here on this floor." I said, "What kind of encryption are you running?" "Oh, no, it's a proprietary protocol. They'll never break into it." 3 days later, they're freaking out because one professor's cooking. Somebody broke into the server. I said, "Welcome to Georgia Tech." So. Okay. Let's see, I need Internet Exploder. There we go. Okay. We're back. I think we're working.
Maybe?
Yes. We
No.
Somebody hates me. Well, that's okay. I guess it's not easy enough for my grandmother to use. There you go. Well, we'll get started anyway. What we're talking about today is a thing called session hijacking, now, or otherwise known as sidejacking. Now, what I recommend you guys who are going to, like this guy with a pen and paper already ready, and you're viciously scribbling notes, the easiest thing to do is at the end of the presentation, I'll put up a URL. Go there, download this. It has all the links in it to everything I'm talking about in here. And save yourself, you know, wrist cramp or something. Okay, now, what we're talking about today is sidejacking. And we're going to talk about a few things. For those of you, how many people actually know how sidejacking works, besides the people who've used FireSheet? Wow, okay, so this is going to be perfect. For those of you who know how this works, just ignore about the next 5 minutes of stuff. We're going to talk about what is state, how session hijacking works, the fact that this is not a new problem. In fact, when you find out how old this problem is, you're going to be shocked. Some tools used for session hijacking. Why is this suddenly all of a sudden a big deal if it's been around so long? We were going to do a FireSheet demonstration. If I get it working, I will make it work. And the big thing is how to protect yourself and where to get additional information. So the first thing is stateless protocol. HTTP is designed to be a stateless protocol. That means if I want to order something on the phone, I call the guy on the phone and say, "Hi, my name is Keith," and I hang up the phone. Then I pick up the phone and says, "Hi, my name is Keith, I'd like to order," and I hang up the phone. Every time you do anything with a web browser, which we'll demonstrate, it is stateless. It doesn't remember the previous conversation you had with the server. Well, that's the way it was designed. Well, this creates a problem. Why would you need state? Well, I don't know, little things like online banking. Oh, yeah, that was you that logged in and not your guy sitting next to you, who's, by the way, hacking your account right now as we speak. Web shopping, social networking, anything that has to tie to a person or remember the current state you had, like what was in your shopping cart. So here's an example without state. If you were using something like Amazon, for instance, first you request a web page at some site. It goes to the server. The server in turn requests a login. You say, "Oh, fine, here's my user ID and password." Now you notice it's in red, so that's actually encrypted. They did good. They send the encrypted data. The web server responds with the code for the web page, which your browser begins to parse. At this point, it's not displaying anything. It's just got the code. and it says, oh, well, there's a basic framework. I don't have to request anything for that. And it puts a basic frame on the screen and says, look, there's an icon that's supposed to go there. It says, I need that icon. Now, remember, it doesn't remember who you are. It's stateless. So it goes over and requests the object. And the server probably says, who are you? And, of course, you request the login. The user puts in his user ID and password, once again encrypted, returns the object, and displays the object on your screen. Now, you can imagine going to do a search on Amazon and the 205 books that it returns, every one of them asks you for a login. About the third one, you're going to rip the network cable out of the wall. Okay, so that's why they came up with state. Now, the way state works is like this, same thing. Request the site. We then go over, it requests a login. You log in over HTTPS. And then it returns what's called a cookie. The cookie maintains state information. Now, there's a lot of ways of doing cookies. I won't get into it. But basically, this allows you to it to remember where you were and who you were the next time you talk to the server. Here's how it works. It sends your cookie. I parse the code for the web page. I request the object. Only this time I include my cookie. I don't have to log in again. It says, oh, it's Keith. Okay, here's your stuff. Gives it back. I display the page. And it does this automatically. For every object, it automatically hands out that cookie. Everybody clear so far? Okay. If you have any questions, by all means, just get Andrew back there with the microphone and ask. You can. This is a conversation. I'm not trying to preach you here. Now, here we have an attacker. Now, I request the web page, just like we did before. Request the login. I log in. It gives me a cookie. Now, this is the key point. The hacker is watching. Now, when you're on a wireless network, I'll give you an example. If you're listening to the radio, AM 750 here in Atlanta, does the radio station know you're listening? No. Guess what? Same thing with a wireless network. You're broadcasting into the air. No, well, you don't know if somebody's listening to your conversation. The attacker hears the conversation. Attacker sees your cookie and grabs a copy for himself. In the meantime, the cookie goes on to you. You have no idea this has occurred. It didn't stop at his computer. He just heard it right out of the air. Okay? You do the same thing. You request the object. You go on about your business. Everything's good. In the meantime, the attacker, with your cookie, requests the server and says, hey, I'm Keith. Could I have his web page, please? And it promptly returns it. And now, I'm Keith. Well, I am Keith, but you know what I mean.
Now Blake is Keith, too.
Yeah, basically. That's right, Keith squared. It's like, so all your base are belong to us. So saving state with cookies is not new. The guys at Netscape originally came up with this idea in 1994. Internet Explorer, now mind you, this was just an idea. They were saying, how would we capture state? This would be really cool. So they came up with this idea, and immediately Microsoft jumped on it, and in 1995 included it in Internet Explorer, which essentially made this the default standard for how you do state. Really not a good idea, but that's what happened. The IETF in 96 said, this is really bad. In 2003, the very first time that OWASP, Open Web Application Security Project, posted a list of the top 10 fails for websites and what you need to do to protect yourself, for the very first time in 2003, put it together. And one of the top things on their list was session management, which is what we're talking about. And it has stayed on the list ever since. These are some of the tools. Now, you notice there's a lot of them. However, if you've, except for FaceSniff, that's a new one for the Android that just came out. I haven't played with that, primarily because I work at a university, and this phone, well, basically I use a very taut string when I talk on this phone to the other phone. I don't have a phone to play with, so if somebody wants to donate an Android phone so I can play with it, that'd be great. But you see, there's a lot of ones, and that hamster and ferret one was a particularly cool one that came out at Black Hat and DEF CON a few years ago. However, all of these, you kind of have to know how to use a sniffer and how to do things, except for FaceSniff, which is essentially FireSheep for the Android. Then FireSheep came out. Now, FireSheep, you'll need to turn up for the video here in a second. Okay. FireSheep made it so easy. All these other tools are hard to install and hard to use, relatively. FireSheep is a tool that my grandmother could install, and you'll see why. Most service providers at first, since 95, have just completely ignored this problem. However, when FireSheep came out, the media happened to get on it at the same time. There was this amazing firestorm of misinformation, and people panicked. And finally, some of the vendors actually did something. Now, what was amazing is Google, when they first realized there was a problem, this is long before FireSheet came out, they jumped all over this. They actually got it right. Pretty much everybody else gets it wrong. So, how easy is it to install FireSheet? Was my computer sound up? Okay. This is a video I shot, just to, in case we'd have an epic fail. This is me actually doing a live install.
This is a demonstration of how easy it is to install FireSheet. First, we find WinPCAP by searching for it in Google. We go to the very first link that comes up. We go and download WinPCAP and save it to our desktop. We then go and look for FireSheet in Google. We take the first link. Scroll down a little ways, and we download the Firefox plugin. Save that to the desktop. We then install WinPCAP. You take all the defaults. It does not require a restart. Then we drag the FireSheet plugin into Firefox, install it, restart Firefox, and then we start up our FireSheet plugin. There you have it. It's that easy.
That's a minute and 8 seconds. You, how many now feel they're an Uber hacker? Congratulations, you are. Okay, now, here's the requirements. You need Windows XP or newer and WinPCAP, OS X 10.5 or newer on Intel processor. You can use Linux. There's now a plugin for Linux. HP WebOS, which if you have, I'm sorry, HP has canceled WebOS. Firefox, you need 3.6.12 through 3.6.21, 32-bit only. Does not work with 4, 5, or 6. However, I think on the developer site, they may have a version if you want to compile it yourself that will run on that. I haven't really looked into that. Also, if you want to work on switch to networks instead of open wireless or something that's essentially a bridged or hubbed network, you're going to need ARP spoofing tools. You'll have to figure that out. All these links, by the way, that are in blue, those are actual links which will take you to pages that explain what all this stuff is. It was originally reported that this would not work on WPA, PA2, or PA2 pre-shared key. However, once it hits the router, it's no longer encrypted, and your machine accepts broadcasts even though it is encrypted. So since ARP spoofing does broadcasts, guess what? You can get owned even on them. Now, here's the misconception. It's not new. That's the number one big thing. This has been around a long time, and a lot of people have been doing this, and they've been doing this to you without your knowledge. It's not just for wireless networks. Trust me, this works on wired networks. I've been doing this all week on a wired network as I've been preparing for this. It's not just for wireless, as we said. You will need, if you're on a switch network or something with encryption other than WEP, you're going to need ARP spoofing. This is where we would do this really, really awesome FireSheet demonstration, and luckily I think I figured out what the problem is. I was sitting here contemplating. I switched networks. So let's see if this will work. Now, let me kill that and restart it. As you can tell, this is a really old app. This is circa 2005, I think. Yes, it worked. Okay, now, unfortunately, what I wanted to do to demonstrate that we're not doing any shenanigans weirdness is I was actually going to log in from a completely separate laptop. However, my Linux box failed me. I get no display for some weird reason. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump over here and go to... By the way, this program is KeePass. I highly recommend it. Let's go to Facebook. Where am I? There I am. Now, what I'm about to do, does not work out of the box. I'll explain that here in a second. So we're going to Facebook, and I'm going to log in. Now, let me jump over here for a second. You notice I don't have any information here, right? Now I'm going to go over to Facebook. I'm going to log into Facebook. And this, I just love this. See, my 600 character password typed in just the blink of an eye. So it's, okay, while we're doing that, let's go see if we can get Twitter to work. Apparently, thank you. Incorrect email. Okay.
Yeah, the email is missed.
Okay, not a problem. We can fix that. As soon as this comes back. So how about them Braves? Anyway. By the way, for those of you who are new to hacking, and I will tell you, hacking is an exercise many times in frustration where you have to deal with stuff like this. Okay.
We've had some new people come in since the start, so I will repeat our initial disclaimer. We have an open wireless network. Feel free to use it. Know that you are willfully and knowingly consenting to having your information shared to the entire class.
Is my network actually working?
Yep.
Oh, thank you. See, this is... Oh, yeah, there is. There you know. Thank you. Whoever... Do you need a job? Because you've been most helpful. Okay. Let's see if Facebook's up. Okay, it is. Now, we're going to do this the old-fashioned way. There we go. Let's try this. Bingo, yes. Thank you for spotting that for us. So now if we go here, we got nothing. Wow, isn't that just special? Today's not my day. Anyway, what would have happened had this been a real test, and you realize about 5 minutes after this session, I'll be back here and it'll start working, and it was because of something really stupid I did. Okay, over here you'd have a little icon. And when you double click the icon, it would look like that. Now, what's interesting is when you log out, Facebook recently changed something. When you log out, the original owner logs out of their Facebook session, it invalidates the cookie on the server. They didn't used to do that, which meant even though you've logged off, you've gone home, your session would still work for the hacker. Okay? However, for Twitter, they do not disable your cookie. So after you log out, it continues to work. And that varies per vendor. Now, here's part of the problem. You would think that the next time there's a patch cycle at Facebook, it would still be broken. Think again. At any time, this can change. Whatever their security policy is, it can change at any moment, which is really a bummer. It leaves you as the consumer totally vulnerable. So now, by the way, I do not have your user ID and password. How would I get it?
Change it.
Ah, but I need to know your password to change it. So what would I try next? No, that's a good guess though, but you can do that with a sniffer, but no. I did this at a conference with a bunch of adults and a bunch of high school students, and this one high school student in the front, you could see the gears turning, like, oh, I got it. Change your email address. No authentication necessary, then log in and say, I forgot my password, and it'll mail it to you. So then I really own your account. So let's go back to our presentation here. By the way, I'm going to work on this afterwards. Hey, how do you like my demonic sheep? The artist guys in our department came up with that. It was pretty cool. I thought, it's just so awesome. Okay, so how do you protect yourself? Always use HTTPS everywhere. Now, I'll warn you, you're going to do this, HTTPS to Facebook, and you're going to log in, and as soon as you've logged in, it's going to revert back to HTTP and give away your cookie. We'll explain how to solve that. Every site's a little different. So the next thing you do is you're going to use a tool we'll talk about here in a second. You should use HTTPS everywhere. Even if you're on HTTPS, if you browse to a site that uses HTTP, it's possible to do another attack called a surfjacking attack. Go to that link, it'll explain it. And that allows me to fake your, do a man-in-the-middle attack and get you to divulge your HTTPS cookie. And I still own your link, which might be your bank account. So be careful when you're doing your checking or something at the bank at Starbucks. Now, one of the things you can do is use NoScript or HTTPS anywhere. The advantage of those two is not only do they force HTTPS, or can, so that even if they revert back to HTTP, it secures it again. It will also go in and set the cookie flag to the secure flag, turn it on, which prevents your browser from giving it away over HTTP inadvertently if somebody's listening. Also, you should configure your social site to force HTTPS. Now, here's why I really don't like Facebook. There is only one place officially at Facebook that tells you how to do this. There is a setting in your security settings to do this. There's no help within the Facebook page for it. It's a blog entry that somebody put on a blog who works for Facebook. There is no official page anywhere, including their security site, that explains how to protect yourself. Gmail and Twitter, on the other hand, have an entire help page with excruciating detail that tells you exactly how to protect yourself. So I highly encourage you to turn those on. Now, I'll warn you now, it will break some functions. Chat will stop working, some games will stop working, and what's really cool is Facebook will warn you, thankfully, and say you're about to go to a site that requires HTTP. If you go there anyway, it disables this setting and gives away your cookie. So basically, they're out to get you. Now, here's the plugins and what operating systems, or not operating systems, but browsers they work with. You'll notice the complete absence of Internet Exploder plugins. Okay? There aren't any. HTTPS Everywhere is one of my favorites. It's put out by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Okay? Great people. NoScript, also a favorite plugin. I highly recommend you use that. And there's two for Chrome there, which I don't use Chrome, but there you go. What you would do is if you're on a hostile network, which is pretty much every network but yours, and if you have an open wireless, consider your network hostile. Use a VPN. I'm not going to go into what those are. Go to that link. It'll explain it. Or use an anonymizer or proxy that does encrypted traffic, like Tor or John Denim. Tor is my favorite. That's also put out by the EFF and the Department of the Navy, I believe. You could also fight back. Now, we're going to get into the legal aspects of this. You can use Black Sheep, which detects FireSheep, but it does this by spoofing some traffic on the network. And in some states, spoofing traffic can get you arrested. Okay? And then there's Fire Shepherd, which claims to attack and crash FireSheep. However, the developer site did say that they fixed a bug that they were exercising and it doesn't do it anymore. So there seems to be an arms race going between the FireSheep developers and the Fire Shepherd developer. Always use HTTPS. Oh, this is if you have a web server, configure it to use HTTPS. Always set the secure cookie flag. That's what you can do for your customers. There's a new technique called one-time cookies developed by the Georgia Tech Information Security Center. You can go there and get a copy of their paper. I don't think that's in production yet, but if you're interested in that, contact me. I have cards up here, and I can get you in touch with the scientists who developed it, and they're trying to get this out into use. There's also slaying FireSheep, which is a method of cookie management. However, I think that's another arms race condition where they can get around it, so that may not work for a while. Also, go to the OWASP top 10 site. You notice that two of the, number 3 and number 9, deal with this very issue. And they've been there like forever. This problem never goes away. That link at the top is the link you want. That goes to my page at Georgia Tech. And the very top link of the presentations is Sidejacking. Go get the zip file. And it has all these links in it. So I'll leave that. Now, there's, by the way, at the end of this is a whole bunch more links, and the very last page has contact information. It's got my email and phone number, but I'll leave this up so people can write that down. That's pretty much the presentation on that part. So now, there's the question is, if you use a tool like this, what are the legal risks? And for that, we have our great friend, Blake, who will tell us what the legal risks are without telling what the legal risks are, because remember, he is not your lawyer.
Correct. And basically, the legal risk is if you just use FireSheep to watch the network, you're probably okay. As soon as you hit one of those links that brings up their page using their cookie, you're in violation of any number of possible laws. And believe me, if you do something and get caught, they're going to go through the entire code and throw everything they can at you. The federal law in question, if anyone wants the citation, is going to be the Stored Communications Act, which is 18 U.S.C. 2701. You can read all of it. Basically, what it says is anyone who intentionally accesses without authorization another person's electronic information is in violation of federal criminal law. So it's not just a little state court. You go all the way up to the federal courthouse. It is a felony. There are all sorts of state laws. They vary from place to place. The case I brought in that I thought was interesting is a California case, In re Rolando. It was actually a case against a juvenile, so they didn't hammer him as hard as they could, but they got him under identity theft. They got him under defamation because he went in and started messing with someone's Facebook page, posting, you know, malicious status updates and that sort of thing. They tried to get him for molestation because his victim was under 18.
Sex crime,
yeah,
forever.
Yeah, congratulations. You access someone's Facebook page and now you're a sex offender. Be very, very careful with this stuff. They will find something to throw at you. Another fun one is the Tennessee entertainment theft law. Say you go into someone's, you use this to go into someone's Steam account or their Netflix or their Hulu. Suddenly you're stealing entertainment, you're stealing TV, games, whatever. If you go over $500 in value, congratulations, you've committed a felony. They can hammer you for that.
Is that value for perceived damage or actual damage? Do you have to prove an actual dollar loss, or can you do it like you do for pain and suffering sort of thing?
It's not pain and suffering. It's statutory. It's the copyright damages. Statutory Ooh. Copyright damages. So yeah. Not only can Tennessee go after you for the violation of the entertainment theft law, Motion Picture Association is going to come after you for copyright violations. So, yeah, there's criminal penalties. There's civil penalties. The flip side of this is if someone does this to you, you have all sorts of remedies that you can go after them for. Defamation, you can press criminal charges. You can really screw someone up for trying to do this, and even if they're just playing around, I mean, literally, this guy was a juvenile. All he did was access someone's Facebook page, post a few bad status updates, and he's spending 3 years in jail in California.
Does anybody do these demos anywhere here? I get asked to go to conferences and do these demos where they actually work. Okay, so what I'll do, for anybody who wants to actually see this work for real, I'm going to get this working. So if you stop by any time during the con here, I'll have it set up where I can actually show you it working.
I think there's something wrong with the wireless because I tried to jump on and now I can't surf.
We may have a network issue. We'll have to work that out. But I will get this working, and we'll be able to show you it actually hacking. Now, you'll notice that for this demonstration, I used my own accounts. Okay? However, I do get asked to go to conferences where we do security demonstrations. One is the Georgia Educational Technology Conference every year. I get asked to go there, and I do a Wall of Sheep and a FireSheep demonstration. And there, we're actually capturing real people's credentials. Well, first off, we tell people that we're doing that. I do it in, we're not doing this behind some closed screen. I'm right out in the cafeteria with a giant projection screen giving a lecture as I'm doing it, and I have permission of the network operators. So we're treading on some thin ice there because somebody could take exception to it, and what will happen is it really goes to a judge and jury, and they're going to have to decide whether I was violating the letter of the law or the spirit of the law. So there is some possibility there. Luckily, since I'm there officially from Georgia Tech, I got our whole legal team behind me. But yeah, be careful if you do this. I would highly recommend when you demo it, you use your own account for demonstration.
And one thing to point out, we were actually having this discussion earlier. FireSheep, as he said, does not actually give you their password. It gives you a way to get their password. That is not a requirement of the law. Most of these laws require is willful access to the account. You don't have to actually compromise specific credentials.
Yeah. Now, the thing that you really have to worry about is not that you're going to get caught and busted. It's the fact that this guy over here in the red t-shirt with his laptop out who's got FireSheep installed right now is sniffing everybody's credentials. Okay.
Actually, I use the FireSheep demo. I want you guys to capture something, but you guys did not.
I will get that working. So if you want to come by and hang out later, we'll get this working. The problem, and this is what I talk to when I do conferences, people will say, especially I do Wall of Sheep, and it's got their password, and it shows the first three letters. Now, the funny one was when I used to have just all asterisks for their password. I wasn't giving away any information at all. And this teacher argued with me, saying, you don't have my password. I said, yeah, it's right there. I just blocked it out so everybody doesn't have it in the room here. And they said, no, I don't have any asterisks in my password. That's not my password. And I said, really? Clearly, clearly, click. And now his whole password's displayed. I said, is that your password? He goes, you've got my password. I said, I'm a security professional. I will delete it with a shred program that will cryptographically erase it from my hard drive. What you got to worry about is that 14-year-old over there. And he goes, yes, but you're an Uber hacker. I says, can he download an ISO? I'm running Backtrack version 5. It comes with all the tools, you know. So, yes, you get some very, very weird things, and it's very easy to do. Now, for FireSheep, as you can see, all you need is pretty much a laptop with a browser. For things where you want to capture credentials, you can use a CD that's live called Backtrack. It's 5 release 1 is the current version out, which is, by the way, running on this, which epically failed. Not due to Backtrack, but because this is some donated hardware that's really old and the poor thing just died. So it has all the tools to do capture. Essentially, you boot the CD live, you go to the command line, you type in Ettercap and start collecting credentials. It's that simple. It's almost as simple as using FireSheep. That's the problem. Anybody sitting at a coffee shop reading a paper looks like he's surfing the net and the background is capturing all your credentials. So I highly recommend you do everything over HTTPS. Anytime you have a chance to talk to a vendor, ping them about only doing HTTPS. Use VPN software. Use HTTPS everywhere. Use NoScript. I highly recommend NoScript. Use a separate user ID and password on every single site. That's why you should use that program called KeePass to keep track of them for you. Because if I own your Facebook page, I don't own your bank account. Everybody uses the same user ID and password everywhere. Everybody does that. Well, except for me and maybe Blake. And who said that? Yeah, here. See, there's another guy here. And two. So there's 4, 5, 6. So there's a bunch.
Use an RSA key for mine.
Yes. Another thing. Now, by the way, you know those security questions where they ask you stuff? You probably heard of this case where this person, you might have heard of him, Sarah Palin. Anyway, she had all the answers to a security question you could look up basically off her Facebook. So a guy used that information to answer a security question, and Bob's your uncle, owned her email account like that. So the point of that is lie.
Yes.
It's okay to lie. So, for instance, when it says mother's maiden name.
Purple.
Coke. Yes, thank you. Purple. That's an excellent one. Purple, Coke. Starbucks. And on the next site, It's projector. Now, the reason, there's a very good reason you want it, you don't want to use in KeePass, you can use a password generator. It'll generate, looks like you barfed on the keyboard, passwords. Okay, you don't want to use that for your security questions. You can, because when you're talking over the phone to the customer support and you're trying to spell backspace, curly brace, you don't want to do that. Use English words. Just use several of them. That makes them unguessable.
Well, customer support will never ask you for your password.
No, not your password. Goodness gracious. Do you have any questions? Yeah. Where's Andrew? That guy right there.
Being that FireSheep is a plugin to a browser, I'm assuming it's also not spoofing IP addresses.
No, it's actually what it does is WinPCAP allows you to put your network card on Windows. There's software. Linux comes out of the box with this ability, and so does OS X. Windows needs special software. It's our special friend. It needs WinPCAP to put the network card in promiscuous mode. And all it's doing is watching all the packets go by. And for those who don't know what promiscuous mode is, your network card listens only to traffic that's specifically addressed to it. It's like when the mail truck goes by, only your mail he looks at it and says, oh, that's for this house, puts it in there. Well, imagine if the truck went by and I said, by the way, could you give me a photocopy of everybody else's mail too? And he goes, sure. And he just gives me a copy of all that. That's essentially what WinPCAP does for you.
So the secondary requests are using the IP address of the attacker, not the original IP address.
Nope, it's using your IP address.
But it's not being spoofed. So how is it bypassing the TCP IP layer of the
OS? Oh, it's not. Essentially what happens is, imagine I get your credentials to verify over the phone that I'm you. They pay no attention to what phone number it comes from. And there's a reason for that, because of NAT.
That's not my question, though. My question is that the attacker is still sending their IP address on the subnet, not the original user that's being spoofed.
Yes. No, they're not. They're actually not. They're using his cookie, but no, they're
but
using
not
their
the original
own IP address.
So if the application server were to bump up those two values, this request is coming from a different IP along with the cookie, it could be defeated at the application level.
Yes, it could. And there's a reason they don't do that, because of NAT.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what happens is there's five of us all in this network, all going to Facebook, and we all have the same IP address but different cookies. And so it has no way to do that. Now, there's a new technique that they're talking about using where they fingerprint your machine based on it asking a question of your browser, what plugins do you have? What version of the operating system? And they ask all these questions and puts that information along with cookie to fingerprint you regardless of your IP address. And it's actually pretty accurate. Unfortunately, it's not in production. Now, that too could be spoofed because all that information is, of course, going across the wire, so it's an arms race, unfortunately.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. There was a guy over here. I don't know where he went, but there he is. And then that guy.
Sorry, this is a real dumb question, but the iPad that Blake is using, if he was logged on the network, you'd be able to see that in FireSheep.
If he was on the same wireless network and he went to Facebook or Twitter, or you realize there's plugins for FireSheep that it uses to detect specific sites. It doesn't just work on any site out of the box. Now, that reminds me. The out of the box, it will not do Facebook, because Facebook made some minor changes to variable names in their cookie. The filter stopped working. So what you do is you go to the developer site, and you search for Facebook handler on the developer, the Git site where the developers hang out. And the original developer in January posted a new JavaScript plugin. It's like five lines of code. You simply paste it into that directory, copy it into the directory where the other plugins are, and presto, Facebook starts working again. So you can, if you want, develop plugins for any site they haven't. And there's a tutorial on the developer site on how to develop handlers. So.
Okay,
so
not that any of you would do that except for legitimate educational purposes.
Yes. I am a professional at a university. Do not do this at home on your network. Use your neighbor's open wireless. Okay.
So of all the devices that you can use to access Facebook, are there any of them that FireSheep wouldn't see?
Yes. It won't see anything there isn't a plugin for, and it's looking for specifically for cookies. So all the traffic is there. It's just pretty much ignoring anything that it doesn't know how to filter. Now, mind you, the traffic is there. You can use Wireshark. There's another tool that I have installed on here that's a browser-based sniffer that's actually pretty cool. I just found out about it the other day and started using it. But Wireshark is a sniffer, and it will collect everything off the network in nauseating detail, which you can then analyze offline to your heart's content, although we're talking serious network hacking at that point because it's not for the faint of heart to go through PCAP tapes. Now, one of the things we talked about, you addressed that, which was if you do this, as long as you don't click on that little icon and show their page, you're probably okay. But that kind of defeats the entire purpose, right? So, yeah. Wait a minute. He had a question.
Yeah, it was kind of follow up to what was going on over here. You were talking about collecting additional information along with cookies. Isn't this an opening for targeted advertising now?
Well, if you wanted to be a network spammer, I suppose you could. not really. In order to do this, the person doing the advertising would actually have to be on your local network. It's not something they can do at the other end. Actually, your bigger fear is somebody like Google. There's a guy that was doing, he works for the Army. He's at West Point, and he does a talk on using what's called... it's what the OSS used to do during World War II. Inference attacks based on Google. For instance, if I want to know troop movements, if I know that you all are in the same, like all these people here are in the same unit in the Army because it says so on your Facebook page, and I suddenly notice this rash of Google searches for Fallujah, guess where you're being deployed? Okay, that's a very real threat. And unfortunately, how many people have a Gmail account? You be owned, okay? So who's the surgeon back there?
Why will this not work on VPN initiation?
With VPN initiation, doesn't use a cookie. It uses a secure handshake, just like SSL and also like SSH, in order to establish an encrypted session that cannot be interrupted. If you actually try to get in the middle of one of these encrypted sessions, what's going to happen is it's going to fail epically and give you this warning that says, there's something wrong, somebody's tampered with the data, and it warns you. Now, unfortunately for everybody who's not in this room, they're going to click OK and get pwned anyway. So. But that's what happens is you're encrypted from end to end. Now, I warn you, if you're using a proxy service like Tor, Tor, it gets encrypted, goes to a bunch of different sites, and pops out at the end unencrypted. If you're not using HTTPS to the server, when it pops out of that exit node, it's not encrypted. Whoever owns that network can still own you using FireSheep. He doesn't have to be local to you. He just has to be able to see your traffic.
Just to take a little tangent real quick on the Google front, one of the things when the last time they amended the Stored Communications Act, which is the federal law that prohibits unauthorized access to a computer, amended as part of the Patriot Act, they added a new section just for people like Google that says that public service providers may disclose customer communications or records, and that is not an unauthorized access explicitly. So all of those remedies you have do not apply to your internet service provider, your mail provider, all that fun stuff. They can share log data, name, email addresses, who you're sending mail to, with anyone other than the government. The government has to have a search warrant. They can share it with DoubleClick, whoever, as much as they want.
No script is your friend. No script, essentially, your browser, your choices are turn on JavaScript or turn off JavaScript. The problem is there's some sites I want JavaScript turned on and some I don't. So, and by default, I don't want it turned on on any site I go to because it can get pwned. I remember the time I had a link to a security site, and I hadn't been to it in a while, so I'm sitting in my office, and I always put my screen facing into the room so people can see what I'm surfing. So they go, what's that evil hacker guy doing in the corner? No, you can look. I'm not doing anything bad. So I click on the site, and this really horrendous porn site popped up on my screen, and I've got like one of these huge monitors, right? So I've got this porn site, and I'm like, ah, and I click close, and it opens two sessions. So I click again, four sessions. I'm like, it's exponential. Oh, I've been pwned. So I had to go in. I actually had to go in and kill. This is back with Netscape. I had to go into Task Manager and kill Netscape to get rid of the stupid thing. Yeah, isn't that special? So with NoScript, it would have prevented that because that site wasn't by default turned on, so that JavaScript would have failed. I would have noticed it's a porn site but not gotten stuck. NoScript is a really, really, really awesome tool. You can specifically allow certain sites. It's just great. Highly recommend it.
He does break some sites.
Oh, yes. Oh, and what's cool is some of the sites, he said it does break some sites really hard. Yes, it does. However, once you enable it for that site, everything starts working. So it will work. But boy, when it breaks the site, and Facebook really complains, it actually has a special page for NoScript. Comes up and says.
Did you want to start? Did you have a part that you wanted to get to?
No, I pretty much touched on the real legal aspects. The only thing I did want to add, for anyone who's interested in the federal laws on this sort of subject, either because you want to know what to avoid doing, how to avoid detection of what you're doing, or, you know, what your remedies might be, the Office of Legal Education for the United States Attorneys publishes a 213-page document on how to prosecute computer crimes. It's instructions to the U.S. attorneys on how to prosecute these federal crimes. Just Google prosecuting computer crimes and it'll probably come up. I meant to get the link for it. Unfortunately, our wireless network is down, so I can't pull it up. But it is a really great, if you're interested in the law, it's a great read because it goes through all of the case law at the, you know, federal and Supreme Court level. It goes through all of the statutes that might be applied.
See if this actually works.
I've got a question for you. Are you aware of any Soho routers that will do wireless client isolation or protect their ARP tables?
That one's for you.
Oh, that's for me. Sorry. I was on another planet. What was the question again?
Do you know of any Soho routers that do wireless client isolation or protect their ARP tables?
Yes. I don't know out of the box, but I know if you have a wireless router, you can do DDWRT. This is for commodity home-based stuff as opposed to the commercial $800 wireless routers that come with all this. You can get DDWRT, which will do session isolation. What that means is I can't use promiscuous mode to sniff the guy next to me, okay? However, they still allow ARP broadcasts because if you don't allow ARP broadcasts, you can't print to things like printers on your local network. So with ARP cache spoofing, you're owned again. Now you can also, you may have to do a MAC flood first, but that's a different attack, and then once you've done that, then you do an ARP spoof. But in any case, all those go out the window when you try to protect the sessions from each other. It just doesn't work because of ARP. Now you can block ARP, but then you can't do things like print. So is there any other questions? Scott asked me to see if I could find a YouTube showing FireSheep working.
Okay. I have two questions, so I won't break them apart. First is the legal one, is that you're using these tools in a corporate environment, and is there any crossover problems illegally if you run into HIPAA information?
Oh, HIPAA is its own beast.
Yes, that's why I bring it up, because I'm concerned, because my bosses might say, hey, we need to find out this, and I suddenly step into a HIPAA.
If you are supposed to be on that network and monitoring its security, then you are covered under the electronic laws, because it gives people who are responsible for security wide access. You are not exceeding your authority on the network, so you're covered there. HIPAA, I'm not a HIPAA expert, as long as you are following the established procedures for your organization, I believe you're fine.
Yeah. I figured as much so, but yeah. It's more like if somebody has run into it already, I would think that would be...
Right. Yeah, obviously, if you come across it and you're not supposed to have it, delete it immediately, et cetera,
right.
et cetera.
Yeah, because we are looking, have looked at isolating that cyber traffic, in a security sense.
Yeah, if you are an administrator of the network and you're using this, then you are covered under the law because you have authority to be on that network and exploring the stuff.
Now, the technical question on the other side of the table is so we're looking at, with a PowerSheet, you're looking at our poisoning and all those sort of low-level techniques is using it automatically?
No. FireSheep does not do any of these low-level ARP spoof or MAC flood, anything like that. It just does wireless sniffing. Or not wireless, but it does promiscuous mode sniffing. The only time you would use these extra tools is when you're on a switched network or you're on a network where you've got isolation, such as WPA2, those have, especially WPA2, where each person has their own session key, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't sniff the other guy's traffic. Now, on WEP, however, once you have the session key for WEP, you're essentially on a shared network. You're decrypting all the traffic that's on the network, so promiscuous node works fine.
So there's no one's yet come out with a tool to do a man-in-the-middle for the encrypted sessions, spoofing both sides with a local signed certificate or anything like that. No one's come up with a script tool for the encrypt, jumping into the SSL sessions and scripting out the...
If you want to do man-in-the-middle attacks on SSL, there
no
are
come
tools
with easy
for doing
tool.
That. It's just not included in...
No one has the easy tool yet. So.
No. Now, they're out there, okay, but they're not. They're just not for the faint of heart. My grandma can't do those.
Yeah, I know. I've done.
So, let's see. Scott gave me a thing here to search for. Oh, wow, there's a cool video of explanation. I could have used him instead of doing my own. So, any other questions while this is loading here? So, how about them briefs? 13 minutes? What is this guy on drugs? Come on, it's not that hard.
He was trying to explain to his grandma.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, grandma, the mouse. Yeah, no, not. Don't get the cat. Okay, so here he's showing an install fire sheet. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? What's that noise? That's not me. Wow, this is... Yeah, okay. No, that's Black Sheep. We don't want that. That's, yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Oh, yeah, I guess we're out of time. So.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you all.
I promise I will get this working so we can, so by all means, if you stop back later,